Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Okay, a solemn day in Israel today, Howard. You know, and not because of Corona this time. We're obviously celebrating Yom HaZikaron. It's not celebrating, we're marking Yom HaZikaron, which is the memorial day for fallen soldiers and victims of terror. And it is indeed a solemn day, even though this is a day that we will spend in lockdown. But it's a very significant day. It's a lot of relevance for most Israelis, because I think that, you know, it would be safe to say that we live here in Israel with relative safety. And indeed, I would even suggest that, that Jews around the world live in the way that they do in relative safety because of the sacrifice that has been made by so many people over the years, 23,816 in all, according to the count that we have, the ongoing count, people who have been killed in the service of Israel, soldiers in wars, people who have died as a result of terror activities in Israel and indeed abroad. And interestingly, 75 names have been added to the list of fallen servicemen just over the last year, as well as another 33 names of disabled veterans who succumbed to their wounds during the course of this year, wounds that had been sustained during their service in previous years. And of course, an Israeli civilian, Rina Schnerb, who was a victim of terror during the course of the year. And so those are the new names that have been added this year to the list of people who are commemorated, especially on this day. The significance is quite interesting because the count that we have, the 23,816, is a count that goes back to the year 1860, which is when the Yeshuv initially is considered to have begun in the neighborhoods of Jerusalem, Mishkanot, Sha'ananim, places like that, where the Yeshuv is considered to have started. And that is really the day upon which the count of the 23,816 really began. And initially, it was a count of people who really gave their lives in the service of the country, in the protection initially of the Yeshuv, and subsequently in the protection of the State of Israel. And that count has been expanded over the years to incorporate people who've been killed as a result of acts of terror, and in not only in Israel, but indeed outside of Israel. And I suppose the question, the interesting question could arise as to what's different between these people, these 23,816, and the 6 million in the Shoah, who were also killed specifically because they were Jewish. When we say people killed as a result of acts of terror, or if we talk about soldiers who have given up their lives in the defense of the State of Israel, the question is, why do we have to be giving up our lives? What's the significance of that? And the only thing that I can really come to the conclusion of is the fact that we are having to protect ourselves because we're Jewish, because it's a Jewish state. People are vulnerable outside of Israel to acts of terror because they are Jewish. And by the same token, we could say people were killed in the Shoah because they are Jewish, because they were Jewish. And so this is really the link between last week, this day, and this week, when last week we had Yom HaShoah to commemorate those who fell during the period of the Shoah. And today we are marking those who have fallen in the defense of Israel and as a result of acts of terror. And the storytelling really comes to its fore during a day like today, talking about those who have fallen, talking about the acts of bravery they've committed, even people who've fallen many, many years ago, the ceremonies that took place mostly online without audience last night and those that will take place today as well. Talk about individuals to try and bring home the individual aspect, the speeches that were made and that are made on a day like today, or addressed to the grieving families of those who have unfortunately been taken away from us, many of them at a very, very young age, only 18, 19, 20, very, very young people who, during the course of their service, have given up their lives in the defense of the people and in the defense of the State of Israel, and many, many personal stories indeed that come to the fore, that too numerous to mention and would be doing a disservice to talk about one particular story at the expense of others, because the stories are just fascinating. And when people remember those who have fallen and some of the bravery, the acts of bravery that were committed, the way in which they fell, and the way that they really, it's what, you know, what we would call Mesirat Nefesh. They really gave of their souls in the defense of the state of Israel. And even today, when young people are called to the IDF, they go into the army knowing full well that they're putting themselves in harm's way and that anything could literally happen to them. Just wearing that IDF uniform and moving around Israel could attract attention of somebody who might want to do them harm. And of course, it goes without saying that when serving on Israel's borders and even beyond Israel's borders, because we've now become, in recent years, become much more familiar with some of the activities that the IDF and the Secret Service, the security services are doing beyond Israel's borders into enemy countries, collecting information, collecting intelligence, going out on the sea, in the air, on the land. There is no limit to what people are prepared to do. And I think that on a day like today, we just take a moment to pause and to think not only about those who have fallen, but indeed to think about those who are currently serving and the amount that they're giving up, the amount that they're investing in the service of our country and the safety of our people.
Absolutely. It must have been very, I mean, it was very, very different last night and today, because you can't have public displays. To some extent, what I was seeing online last night, in a way more moving than some of the scenes that I've watched with crowds in prior years. Was that just me, or was last night particularly moving?
Well, I think that what we're finding this year is, in a way, that a lot of what's going on, the ceremonies and the events that are taking place, are more accessible to people, ironically, because of the fact that there's no crowd. There's a lot of effort to put it online, lots of YouTube channels, TV channels, lots of online broadcasts, Facebook broadcasts and things like that. So all of a sudden, things that people sitting in their homes couldn't participate in, now they can. And it's not only people sitting in their homes in Israel, it's people sitting in their homes around the world who can simply tune in to the YouTube channel or to the Facebook broadcast or whatever it is and see live what's going on. So I think it's become a lot more accessible. And I think it was moving in the sense that it's kind of a little bit more haunting, a little bit more eerie when you see people standing at the Kotel, for example, where the main national ceremony took place in the presence of the President of Israel, in the presence of the Chief of General Staff. You saw the Kotel empty of people, nobody there. It's quite a haunting sight. It's not a sight that we're accustomed to seeing, as opposed to the hustle and the bustle of people coming along to the Kotel.
Anthony, is that the emptiness makes us consider those that are not there anymore. So
I think that's right.
So it almost creates this void and the vacuum, which is now very visible. Whereas when you've got these crowds gathering, you don't feel the lack. But when it's empty, that space is almost meant for the people that are no longer there.
I think that's absolutely right. I think there's a little dilemma involved, though, because the president said in his words last night that he would like to look into the eyes of the grieving families, not to talk to them from a distance, not to have them sitting in their homes and listening to him. He wants to look into their eyes to say, thank you for your sacrifice, to say that we grieve with you as a nation, that you are not grieving on your own. This is something which is a very, very personal conversation and really demands, you know, getting together on a personal level. And yet, the people of Israel were involved last night. People were watching, and there was this amazing outpouring where people stood on their balconies singing Hatikva along with Chazan Shai Abramson, the chief Chazan of the IDF, who led the singing of Hatikva at the Kotel Plaza in the national ceremony last night. And then there was there were drones with cameras that were deployed around Israel, taking pictures of people standing out on their balconies outside, some of them just in the street outside their homes, and singing Hatikva together with lights, with white shirts on, with something which signifies the relevance of this day. And I think that was an amazing scene of kind of coming together in isolation. I literally like that. People trying to feel connected to each other. So there was really an attempt to pull people together, even though there was certainly a void in terms of meeting with the bereaved families, who's really, this is the day that's focused on them. We focus on them and on their grief and on the sacrifice that they've made in losing a loved one or loved ones in some cases, unfortunately, as a result of wars and as a result of acts of terror. So this is really about today. Of course, we will have another siren. There was a siren last night at 8 o'clock Israeli time. Today there will be another siren. It will take place in approximately 2 hours from now. The country will come to a standstill. We invite people from around the world to join, even though you won't have a siren in your local neighborhood as we do in ours, but we invite you to join and just take a moment to pause and to respect the memories of those who have given up so much to give us all that we have today, which is not insignificant.
Absolutely, 100%. And of course, tomorrow we will focus on Yom HaTzmaut, which is just such a strange shift from one day, but yet a logical shift from one day to the next. Anthony, I just want to talk to you about what went on at a Knesset subcommittee yesterday. Strange report.
Wow.
So tell us, tell us what went on.
Well, the Knesset is now trying to make the situation to prepare the ground for the inauguration, the swearing of the new government. And the new government is a little strange because of the fact that we've got this rotation of prime ministers, which is envisaged by the coalition agreement. And that rotation apparently needs some changes to the law. Not only changes to the law, but changes to our basic law. And the basic law is really kind of a holy place to go to, because Israel doesn't have a constitution. And so in the absence of a constitution, we look to the basic law as a kind of a replacement for what would be a constitution if we had one. And any attempts to try to make changes to that basic law really goes to the very, very heart of, you know, the most basic rights that we have as individuals in a democracy. And of course, now they're trying to make some changes to the basic law to allow the rotation of prime ministers and to allow the government, as envisaged by the agreement that has been struck between Prime Minister Netanyahu and Benny Gantz. And there are some people who are very much against it. There are some people who are against it because they feel that it really goes to the heart of our democracy, and that we shouldn't be changing the basic laws in order to allow for the inauguration of a particular set of circumstances which has been agreed between the parties as a coalition agreement. There are others who feel like they've been politically left out of things, like, for example, the Yamina party, who feel that they've effectively been abandoned by Prime Minister Netanyahu, despite the fact that they form part of his right-wing bloc that he promised faithfully that he would never break up, and now seems somehow to be leaving them behind as he marches forward with the Gantz coalition agreement. And so there are some also political sour grapes that are mixed into the reactions. But yesterday, there were some scenes where two lady members of the subcommittee were forcibly removed from the meeting after really getting very, very angry, and even some quite violent outbursts from them. And it was quite a scene to see masked security people from the Knesset literally physically forcing these people out of the meeting because of their poor behavior. Mm-hmm. Obviously coming out of passion for what they really believe in.
Yeah, but I guess.
I don't know if a mask means that you're not obliged to maintain social distancing.
Yeah.
That seemed certainly to be the case when they put their masks on and they started to take Tamar Zandberg out of the meeting. She wasn't the only one. There were some others as well, but it was certainly quite a strange scene. So unfortunately, even though we do theoretically have a coalition agreement and we do theoretically have a government that's been agreed upon, there is still quite a lot of work to be done yet until the government can actually take office. And of course, a good deal of skepticism as to whether this rotation of prime ministers is really going to take place in the way that it has been envisaged. A lot of people feel that it won't be for one reason or another, that it won't happen. But a lot of skepticism in any event. And of course, all the changes that are now being made in order to facilitate the rotation to some people seems an absolute waste of time because of of the fact that they don't believe that the rotation actually will take place. We will continue with that. But of course, our focus for now is not only on Yom HaZikaron, but as you rightly pointed out, the fact that Yom HaTzmaut begins tonight. We will celebrate at home in lockdown. And I look forward to talking to you more about Yom HaTzmaut in lockdown tomorrow.
Absolutely, on a happier day. Time is 8 o'clock. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. We speak to him every morning at this time.